You locked me up over it. Or don't you remember that time you locked me in a cell and didn't feed me for a day? Oh, please, you can't blame us for being suspicious. We weren't about to take a chance on that.
Dante bit back his question about why they'd believed him about the fake.
Or, he thought queasily, why they'd pretended to.
There was something else he needed to know first, something he hadn't expected to find an answer for when he first sought out Larimore this day.
"Then how did you lose it in the first place?" he said. "We didn't lose it. Someone stole it."
"How?"
"Because he was technically its owner," Larimore said, folding his arms and glaring across the room. "A couple decades back, there came a time when the old head of the order was supposed to step down. He didn't much like that idea, despite his obvious frailty and probable senility, and was even less fond of the idea of Samarand taking his place. After the council forced his ouster, it was found he'd absconded with the book."
Dante pinched the bridge of his nose.
"What was his name?"
"Callimandicus," Larimore said. He rolled his eyes. "Needless to say, that's caused us no end of trouble between then and now."
"I read somewhere Samarand killed the previous head of the order."
Dante felt as if he were speaking from a point a few feet distant from his body.
"That she usurped the position."
"Hardly. His time was up, figuratively speaking. Though surely he's with Aron now. The old bastard had actually fought during the Third Scour."
"But that would mean, even 20 years ago, he'd have been a century old."
95-ish, I think." Larimore shrugged, gave Dante an odd look. "This was all before my time, in any event."
"So what did he do after he left?"
Larimore laughed to himself. "A lot of intricate but ultimately failed scheming, for the most part. About a year after he ran away, he made a rather pathetic attempt to retake control. When that didn't work, he spent the next 4 or 5 years in petty vengeance. Did manage to kill a few of our men, including one who meant something. He disappeared after that last fight. He's dust and bones by now. If he were still breathing, he'd be trying something even now."
"I see," Dante said,
groping mentally for the top of his head, which felt like it had floated free at some point in their conversation.
"What's wrong? You have the look of a drunk lord who's just discovered he's shat himself."
"Perhaps it was something I ate," Dante said numbly.
"Shall we go for a walk? Cleanse out the blood?"
"Let's."
Larimore was a lively man, and he didn't so much rise from his chair as spring from it. He strolled in the direction of the main hall, passing servants and soldiers rushing about on their business of keeping the castle together, brushing by acolytes and students off on some duty for their instructors. Dante felt their eyes tracking him and Larimore through the hallways.
"You already have more responsibilities than some men who've been with us a year or more, you know," Larimore said in a normal tone, not caring who heard.
"I've earned it, haven't I?" Dante said through the screech of his thoughts.
Had anything Callie told him been true? How much could he question Larimore before he betrayed his split interest? What should he be asking now, if he were here for no other reason than worshipping Aron and culling his own power?
Did Samarand deserve to die?
"I suppose," Larimore said, "you haven't failed us yet anyway. I suppose you're of the school of thought that young men should be allowed to rise until they falter, to ascend like a hawk on an updraft until they can naturally go no higher. That seems fair."
"Seems fair," Larimore laughed. "Then it would be no stretch to assume you think a measured education, promotion through experience rather than raw potential, those are no more than meaningless hoops you have to jump through for the amusement of powerful men."
"Aren't they?"
Dante said. And he sensed they stood on a peak, that his answers now would determine which way everything else fell. How close are you to your goal? How badly do you need strong backs to help shoulder the load? We're close. Very close. Do we really need one more hand to help us shape the nether? Who knows? It would help more to have the book. Failing that, we're going to need all the help we can muster. Then stop throwing hoops at me and make me into something that can tip the balance. Indeed. Larimore snapped his fingers, looked surprised. Oh, it didn't work. He snapped again. Then a third time. He shook his hand at the wrist, scowling at it. Damn thing seems to have given out. Dante stopped mid-stride. He bit his lip, oblivious to the self-inflicted pain until the metallic taste of blood filled his mouth. He opened the channels of his mind and let the shadows flock through them, calling out through the clear, open pathways Nack had showed him, until he could actually see black streaks shooting from the dark places in the room to gather around his hands and at the trail of blood that leaked past his lips. So Callie, too, had used him. And now Larimore mocked him. Were all men treated this way? Or was it because when they looked on him, they still couldn't see past his unlined, beardless face? They pretended to be wise, but none of these self-important men knew a God's damned thing. Let Larimore at least look on the full reach of his power. For a moment, Dante didn't know how he'd make it manifest, simply letting the forces grow until his limbs shook and his blood burnt with a sheer energy he hadn't felt since he'd strained all his body in the battle to free Blaze from the lawmen of Wetton. He saw Larimore's natural state of ironic glee melt away. His smile recede until his lips were a taut line, the light of his eyes shift from amusement to alertness, and perhaps to alarm. Dante's throat felt too tight to swallow. His vision grayed at the edges. "Release it," Callie would say. "For the love of the gods, let it go." Dante let it burn on until his skin felt ready to peel from his flesh, enjoying every hot second of the pain that held him in its palm. He spread out his arms, as much for the spectacle as for the need, and then he nodded once and set the shadows free, not in a focused fire or the bleeding edge that cut people's flesh, but in a pure sphere of unfiltered force. It expanded from his body so fast, Larimore was knocked down before he could cry out. It whipped the dust on the floor into billowing clouds. Rugs flapped and spun into the walls. Vases and statues flew sideways from tables like an invisible tablecloth had been yanked from beneath them, smashing on walls, clattering to the ground. Servants and students spun from their feet to land on hands and knees, or hard on their backs. The sphere met the walls then, striking so hard it boomed like cliffside surf, like a battering ram swung into a great gate. Dante sunk to his knees, seeing black and white through the slits of his eyes. Then the crash of the nether was gone, replaced by a silence, interrupted by the clinks of glass and pottery ringing to rest on the ground, by the slow crackle of stone flaking from the nearest wall, by the light sobbing of the servants, and his own ragged breathing. "How insightful," he heard Larimore say, distant as a cloud. The man rolled to his feet and brushed dust from his worn clothes. Around them, the other men who'd been knocked down dragged themselves up and suddenly remembered tasks of calamitous importance, disappearing through doors and around corners. Dante made no move to get up. His whole body tingled as if it were no longer just his, but belonged to all the world. His mouth was a loose O of dumb shock and simple exultation. Larimore towed a broken shard of glass. "As if we didn't have enough work already." "I don't need you," Dante slurred, dreamlike. He laughed, the low, breathy laugh of an idiot.
"Shut up, you clown," Laramon muttered. He crossed to the wall and fingered the cracks that had appeared in the stone. "I want you to go to your room and think about what you've done. Tomorrow, your true purpose begins."
He walked back to his cell in a daze. The world felt as close and translucent as the time he'd been drunk back in Bressel. He lowered himself to his pallet, heavy as a boulder. It was a long time before his thoughts became shapes he could understand or control.
"Callie lied," he said, when Blaze showed up after night had fallen.
"He's pretty old," Blaze said, turning his back and hanging his sword from a peg on the wall. "Maybe he just forgot the truth."
"Gabe, too. He said Samarand led a coup, killed the old priest."
"Callie was the leader, and the council forced him out, not her. And obviously she didn't kill him." Blaze frowned down on him, noncommittal. "Were they both lying? Or was Gabe just repeating the lies Callie'd told him?"
"I don't know," Dante said.
He stared at the ceiling. "I don't suppose it matters."
"What do you mean?"
"Did Callie send us here to exact justice, or to execute a personal vendetta that's 20 years old?" Blaze's face clouded up. He shuffled his feet around the straw and dirty stone of their cell.
"You're thinking maybe it's a good thing it's taken so long to get things in place?"
"I no longer have any idea what the good thing may be."
"Whenever I have that feeling, I try to go with whatever I haven't tried before."
Blaze sighed through his nose, ruffled his hair. His eyes shifted to Dante's prone form.
"When did you learn all this, anyway?"
"Today."
"Not a week ago. Not a month ago. You haven't just been sitting on this while you let them teach you all their fancy tricks, have you?"
"No." Blaze stuck out his jaw. "I'm not stupid. I know you pretty well. You've been enjoying this, playing them with one hand and me with the other."
Dante sat upright. "That's not true. Isn't it? You're not putting off what we have to do so you can puff yourself up with power. Blaze, I'm not using you here."
Dante told him about his conversation with Laramore, how he'd asked the man what the Order of Aron was up to, and how it had led to their talk of the history between Samarand and Callimandicus. He left out the part at the end, when he'd blown up the keep, and Laramore's promise about his true purpose, whatever that meant.
"I didn't know," Dante said, clasping his hands in his lap. "You see? I'd been looking for a way to get to her. I had. And now it's all been swept away."
Blaze blew up his cheeks and knocked his knuckles on his forehead.
"I'm going to ask a question," he said carefully. "It's going to sound crazy, but I want you to think about it before you answer, okay?"
"Okay," Dante said. Blaze raised his brows.
"Does this change anything?"
"That's crazy," Dante said. Blaze sighed again. Dante bit his lip, wincing when his teeth found the raw split where he'd bitten it open hours earlier. He lowered his voice. "We came here thinking she's a usurper. That if she died, reason would take her place. If her place in the council's legitimate, how can we expect things will be any different just because she's gone?" "I don't know," Blaze hissed. "Gask seems peaceful enough. There's no more murder out there than in any other city. No towns were burning on our way through. But they are burning down in Malin. If we can do something about that, how can we hold back?"
Dante looked down. Wetton, Bressel,
the village he'd left the year before. They were just places he'd once drifted through for no reason more special than that they were near where he'd been born. He didn't miss any of the people he'd known from those times. Who were they? Faces, fragments of memory, that was all. Did the fact he had once known them somehow make them more important than the people in this city, in this kingdom? There were people in Malin who wanted to worship Aron shoulder to shoulder with the devotees of Gashin or Lea or Carvahal or Menok. That was somehow a crime. Who'd made that decision? He shook his head at Blaze. Killing her won't change a thing. It'd be like Gabe said, someone else will take her place and the wheels of history will roll right on. Not if you're the one who takes it, Blaze said. Dante squinted at him until he was certain the boy was serious. Did someone hit you on the head while you were sparring today? Let me see, Dante said. He stood and reached for Blaze's head. Blaze wrestled him away. I'm serious! So am I. Let me see your skull. I bet it's got a big fat crack. What's stopping you? Blaze said, shoving Dante back again. An army of men and an order of priests. Then here's what you do. Blaze narrowed his eyes and tipped back his head in an owlish expression. Get Larimore or someone from the council to back you. Divide them up against each other and promise your supporter you'll be their cat's paw, that you'll do the thing they wouldn't dare, and so claim her seat in their name. Even if they throw you out right after, they'll be too busy squabbling to keep screwing up the South, and if they leave you in her seat, then you can rule like a king and end it all yourself. Dante sat down and chortled into his hands. You're right. Your question wasn't crazy. That's crazy. Only if you lack the vision to see it through. Let's suppose I give it a shot, Dante said, exaggeratedly stroking his chin. I'll have to expose my plan to Off Samarand to whoever I want to back me. What if they don't go for it? How well do you think that's going to fly? Like a cat in a trebuchet? Blaze shrugged. Someone's got to hate her, just figure out who. Good God! Sometimes I think we should just sneak into our chambers in the dead of night and fight our way outside. Blaze's brows knit together. Do you think that would work? I have the strange suspicion the High Priest of Aron is smart and strong enough to use her eerie powers to make sure nobody just stabs her in her sleep. So that's a no. Dante squeezed his eyes shut. You're supposed to be the reasonable one. This is going to be a disaster. You're going to do it, Blaze said, looking as if he couldn't decide whether to be enthralled or horrified. No. Maybe. Larimore's got something in store for me tomorrow. Something important. I want to see what it is before striking down the road to madness. Ah! Cowardice. Cowardice? You're right, Dante said. I'll have the whole place taken over by tomorrow, then. I'm naming you my Secretary of Parades. It better be grand, or I'll redub you Secretary of Getting Eaten to Death by Rats. They argued nonsense until Blaze claimed exhaustion. Dante lay in bed for a while after Blaze had fallen asleep, laughing softly at Blaze's plan, its tempting confusion of absurdity and daring and total stupidity, until the darkness of the night and the talk he'd had with Larimore bubbled back into the fore. Why hadn't Callie just told him the truth? Why send him all this way on a false story of Samaran's treachery? Didn't the old man know Dante would have thought the way Blaze did now? That it didn't matter how she'd gained her power, that, legitimate or not, the things she was doing with it were wrong? But he knew why the old man had lied, of course. Because Callie didn't trust him to make the right decision. And so he'd used them in a way he knew would get the results he desired. Dante wanted to feel angry, to rage at the fact he'd once again been used as a piece on someone else's board. but all he felt was tired. For the first time since he'd touched the book, he wanted it to stop. He wanted a moment to catch his breath, perhaps to run away from all these schemes and live for himself, free from the snares of the ambition of other men and himself. He knew that want was nothing more than fantasy. He was caught up in something that would only get bigger before it went away. All he could do now was ride it out until it came to rest.
"No lessons today, Nak," Larimore said as he spilled into the chapel. "We've got more important work for our little scholar."
Nak rolled his eyes over his papers.
"I don't see how you expect me to teach him two languages as well as refine his more ethereal talents when you're always dragging him off on your chores."
"I'm learning," Dante said in Gascon. "Make me some lessons. I will go over them tonight."
"We'll start with clauses," Nak muttered. He waved his fingers, dismissing the boy.
Larimore led Dante into the keep and immediately made a left turn for the stairwell into the dungeons.
"What are we going down here for?"
Dante said, peering into the dim torchlight. He had a sudden vision of being forced to torture Ryan Briggs for answers.
"Nothing," Larimore said. "How cunningly I've tricked you back into prison. You thought you'd get away with your insolence."
"You could use a dose of sobriety," Dante said. "Wrong.
In time, you'll learn the value of running your fool mouth until no one can tell when you're serious. Only then can you get away with saying anything to anyone."
"What does that even mean?" he said.
But Larimore didn't seem inclined to explain. The air of the lower levels rose up to meet them, cool but sturdy, the faint whiff of human filth and things that may once have been rotten, but had since turned to dust. Larimore opened the door to the corridor where they'd hauled Dante not so long ago. Dante skipped his gaze over the thick door behind which he'd been imprisoned, straining his ears for sounds of Riant.
Was he still alive?
Alone in the darkness of that empty room? He glanced at Larimore. The man was smiling. The hallway terminated in another door that opened onto a second stairwell. Larimore grabbed a lit torch from a sconce in the wall, and they continued down into the darkness. The walls weighed on Dante's shoulders. The stone seemed to move beneath the shadows thrown by the flickering torch, as if the walls weren't mortared in place, but were in the process of a silent and half-stalled avalanche. Dante stared hard at his feet until they hit the landing of the lower level and the walls widened out into an unlit corridor.
"Here we are," Larimore said, stopping at the hall's first door.
He fit a key into the lock and leaned into the door as it opened, pouring himself into the room. From behind him, Dante saw black shadows, grey stones, the dull white of a floor full of bones.
"What?" "It's not as bad as it looks," Larimore said. "Do you have any idea how many people have died in this city over the years? Sometimes after the larger sieges, they had to sort of dig up the old to make way for the new."
"That's barbaric."
"Pragmatic," Larimore corrected. "Egalitarian, even. This way, everyone gets a turn in the earth."
He stepped forward into the mess, shuffling his feet against the floor. Bones rattled away from his boots. Dante followed in the path he cleared.
"What do you want me to do with them?" Dante said, shrinking back from the top half of a skull that had rolled within an inch of his foot.
"Tidy up."
"I said you'd be doing something important, didn't I?"
Larimore bent at the waist and knocked away a few random bones. He made a satisfied grunt, then plucked one up and displayed Dante the jawbone in his palm.
"Weird looking, isn't it? Strange to think your teeth are the same substance as the jaw they're embedded in. Yet, they're exposed, naked to the air, and the eye, while the rest of our bones are buried under all that flesh."
"Truly a marvel of nature," Dante said.
It was a large room, perhaps 40 feet deep, and just as far across, and except for a small space around the door, the carpet of bones lay ankle-deep from wall to wall. In the corners they were piled to the knee, gathered in drifts like snow in the wind.
"We've got a few mirrors around the place. You should look at your teeth some day. Quite frankly, it's scary when you think about them like that."
"Is this some kind of lesson on the virtue of looking closely at the things we take for granted?"
"No. It's a lesson on how disgusting our bodies are."
Larimore tossed the jawbone at Dante.
It bounced from his chest, and he puckered his face.
Larimore laughed through his nose.
"Jawbones, ribs, and thighs. One of each, in sets of three. Write Aron's name in blood upon the bone, in Narashtovic, not this decadent Malish, and soak it through with nether until the whole thing's bound up tight. Repeat, gain my eternal praise."
"What? What as in you didn't hear me, or you don't understand?" Dante kicked the nearest skull away from him. "Why?"
"Because Samarand's children are bored with their old toys."
"Samarand has kids?"
Larimore's face bent with a shocking flash of anger.
"What are you, some kind of idiot? They have vows of chastity."
"I thought I was going to be doing something important," Dante said. "You want me to bleed on some bones in a room so low it's under the dungeon?"
"This is important. Before you volunteered, the council was drawing lots to see who'd have to do it."
"This is asinine."
Larimore plowed his feet through the debris, sending bones clattering over each other. He chuckled without humor, then fixed Dante with a stare emptied of any patience. "When the time comes for all the excitement, the council's going to need all the power they can find. Sources they can depend on other than their own frail bodies. These bones, the bones you're going to bleed on,
they'll be the fuel for their deeds."
Dante frowned up at the man.
"Are you putting me on?"
"Big events are always preceded by countless hours of tedious preparation. Like the good book says, proper preparation is the difference between celestial glory and standing around in a field with our dicks in our hands."
"I don't remember that verse."
"Obviously, you haven't been studying hard enough." Larimore dug into his pocket and removed a small, thin knife, more of a pick than a blade, and a delicate black quill covered in intricate silver Narashtovic words. He handed them to Dante. "Any questions?"
"Yes,"
Dante said, holding the knife in one hand and the quill in the other.
"How do I do the things you told me to do?"
"Lyle's flayed balls!" Larimore rubbed his face in his hands. "Ribs of the watchdog, jaws of the dragon, thighs of the lion. Just like Mommy used to sing about when she'd point out the stars. Give yourself a good nick and write Aron's name on each. In Narashtovic. Bind blood to bone with nether. I'm not sure how that part's done, but you're a smart lad. Figure it out."
He sucked in his cheeks.
"Don't kill yourself or anything, but we need a lot."
"Define a lot,"
Dante said, gazing out on the thousands of bones.
"Drink plenty of water."
Larimore winked. He used his torch to light another by the door.
"Don't shut this door either. We've only got one key, and sometimes I lose things. Got a lot of responsibilities for one man, you see."
He flashed his eyebrows, then picked his way out into the corridor. Dante heard him whistling on his way through the gloom. He turned around. Bones from wall to wall. Was this another test? Larimore had barely told him what to do. The man gave the impression he didn't care about anything, but somehow he was the one who kept the wheels of the citadel greased and turning. Dante swept an open circle with his feet and sat down. Larimore wanted bones, did he? He took up a rib, grasping the natural handle where the bone would meet the spine. This bone had once been a part of someone, he thought. Then realized he didn't give a damn. That man had been dead for decades. Whoever he'd been, he hadn't even had the simple courtesy not to get dug up and stored in a forgotten basement until his remains could be involved in some morbid ritual. Dante set the quill in his lap, and with the knife he drew a light incision below his left thumb. His blood gleamed a blackish red in the uneven light from the torch ensconced beside the door. He picked up the quill, glad for the small favor that no one was here to see this bizarre melodrama, then dipped it in the blood in his hand and held the rib close to his face. He painted the letters delicately, one stroke at a time, adding a flourish to their ends. He held out the rib, eyeing it critically. Binded? With the nether? He blinked back the frustration that was crowding his mind. Shadows sucked up from under the piles of bones, coursing up his arm and wrapping themselves around the rib's white surface. He let his desire become a semi-conscious thing, felt rather than verbalized, the way he recognized he was hungry without thinking apple or roast chicken, and smoothed the shadows over the length of the rib. Become one, he thought, and twitched back as the shadows pulsed and then sunk into the bone like water spilled on hot sand. The formerly creamy rib had grown grey, lined with the red-brown letters of Aron's name. And when he set it aside, he had a creeping sense of energy, not warm, not motile, certainly not conscious, but far sharper than the bland feel of the bones around him, or the still air, or the stones of the wall. He grunted and placed it gently on the floor. The second bone was easier. He misspelled Aron's name on the third, and lobbed the thigh bone into a far corner. After that first mistake, he moved quickly, pinching the skin around the cut on his hand to keep it from clotting. Each bone was the work of no more than 5 minutes, and within half an hour he had the start of a pile lying beside his knee. Last night's talk with Blaze felt impossibly distant. He no longer had any way to deny he was doing the work of the Aronites. Delivering letters was reasonably harmless. No doubt 90% of them said nothing but empty chatter. Bodyguarding men who couldn't help themselves was a respectable enough position, Blaze's similar occupation notwithstanding. Capturing criminals was no more wrong than when the Watch did it in every city on the planet. But this, painting bones with blood and locking them up with nether for use in what could only be their attempt to unleash Aron, there was no defense of that. Mercenaries and men off the street couldn't do what Dante was doing now. If they succeeded in releasing the old god, not that he thought such a being even existed, Dante would be in part responsible for that success, and if he failed again, when it came time to kill Saruman, perhaps that too would have its roots in what he was doing down in this neglected ossuary. He grasped a jawbone, tensed his arm to hurl it against the opposite wall. All at once, his feelings broke. His conflict left him like a hulled boat slipping beneath calm waters. Let him do Samaran's work with one hand, while with the other he honed the knife, meant for her heart. Let him tell Blaze he was biding his time, even while he used Knack to learn everything the monk could teach. Uncertainty and self-doubt wouldn't help him. No army was going to smash down the citadel's gates, no heavenly hand was going to guide him through his trials and lead him to justice. He had nothing, and no one but himself. The strength of his hands, and his head, and his will. And if he was going to become the kind of man he intended to be, that would be enough. The wound on his palm had scabbed as he brooded, and he cut a parallel beside it. He worked without thinking, adding to the pile near his knee. He broke for lunch and wandered upstairs, wanting beef, red meat, and fruit, and a barrel full of water. Servants and guards watched him walk by, the way he'd watch a wolf pad through the brush of the open woods. He ate by himself, and returned downstairs without a word more than what he'd needed to get his meal. Once more, the logic of the Nether took his mind. He knew his part. One bone at a time, he created order from the decay.
"Make any progress?" Larimore called to Dante, when he'd halted for the evening and was making his way through the keep.
"See for yourself," he said, ignoring whatever the man said next as he stepped into the yard. Back at his room, Knack had prepared a thick sheaf of notes and lessons. He paged through them, recognizing more of the words than he would have expected, then set the papers aside. Too much lust for knowledge was the trappings and vanity of an unreal world. He spent the next day with the bones, seeing others only at meals. Scabbed lines lay across his palm like tallies on a prison wall. Midway through his third day, in the sub-basement, he heard footsteps, the first that weren't his own. He didn't turn away from his work.
"Impressive," Larimore said.
"I'm busy."
"That's enough for now. I've got something else for you.
More important than laying the foundation of our finest hour."
"Oh, be quiet."
Larimore walked around in front of Dante. He pursed his mouth at the boy's blank expression.
"The council's meeting in an hour. I want you cleaned up by then. You look like you haven't bathed in a week."
"I haven't." Dante blinked up at him.
"What does the council want with me?"
"It's not what they want, it's what you want. Up with you. Time for a lesson in politics."
Dante snorted and finished up the summons for the rib bone he was still holding.
"Sounds enlightening."
"Stop sulking like a child or you'll miss the self-important men puffing their throats and preening their tails," Larimore beckoned. "Come, take a bath for the gods' sakes. Samaran's hand will never be of any use if he doesn't understand how the council works."
"Awful lot left," Dante said, nodding to the numberless bones, then the few score he'd prepared.
"That's enough. I told you the council had been working on this before you. Come and see the court before I punch you in your gross little teeth."
It wasn't the threat that stirred Dante, it was the life behind it. He stood, knees and ankles popping. Larimore stepped forward and patted him on the cheek hard enough to sting.
"There's some fire for your eyes. The way you carry yourself in that chamber will reflect on me, you know. The only way to keep those old bastards in line is to remind them just how old they are."
"Shall I dance for them?"
Dante pulled out the collar of his doublet, tipped back his chin. "Where's my fancy jacket? Don't trained apes wear fancy jackets?"
"Better." Larimore gave him a self-satisfied smile and led him back upstairs, leaving the stacks of bones behind.
In the main hall, he found a young man in a black cassock and dispatched him to gather the fruit of Dante's basement labor. Larimore summoned a gaggle of servants and rattled off a line of orders in Gascon. Dante could follow enough to pick out the words bath and dress, and how the price of sloth would be a word he hadn't learned, but whose etymology meant the breaking of limbs from the body.
"Go make yourself presentable," Larimore said to Dante. "I'll send for you in 40 minutes.
Before Dante could smart off, the man strode off for other business in the deeper rooms of the keep. Dante turned to the servants with something close to guilt. They ducked their heads and gestured him upstairs, where a steaming bath had already been drawn. He barked at the pair of servants who stayed with him to turn away as he undressed, then allowed himself a brief soak. They waited with fresh clothes when he climbed out, and he accepted their finery, slapping away their hands when they attempted to help him put them on. This was how royalty lived. For 2 full minutes, Dante fumbled with the ends of a sash apparently meant for his middle, then sighed, looked up at the ceiling, and let the servant's swift hand secure it around his waist. He suffered them to dose him with perfume, waving them off after the first application. "I'm a man, not a tulip garden," he mumbled in Malish, then ordered them away before they could convince him that it was the way of the court. He brushed his hair, which had grown back out a bit since he'd had it trimmed before Samaran's sermon on Ben, then paced around the cushy quarters until Larimore showed up. The man's mouth was tight, but his eyes danced with mirth as they jumped down Dante's laundered frame. Dante scowled at him. "You people are ridiculous." "Deal with it like a man." Larimore gave him a closer once over, from his combed black hair to the fine silver trim on his cape and doublet and breeches, eyes coming to rest on the scuffed and scarred leather of his boots. "Where are the shoes? What's that garbage wrapped around your feet?" "The boots stay." "Fine. Look like a peasant who's tripped over his hog and fell into a rich man's closet. You dress like you lost a fight with a wildcat, and I've earned that right." "All right, little Lord Spitpolish, let's be on our way." Larimore turned on his heel and took them to a staircase leading to the upper floors. "I'm guessing you're going to think the old men are stupid. You might even be tempted to try to educate them to the specific nature of their idiocy. Surely an idiot could never attain a position as lofty as theirs," Dante said, suspicious he was about to be told what to do. "Indeed. So I'm going to entrust you with your toughest challenge yet, keeping your damn mouth shut. If you try to toss your pair of pennies into the hat, they're just going to laugh at you. Have you ever heard the sound of 11 corpses laughing? It isn't pretty. I've been writing on bones with my own blood for the last 3 days, and that will seem like a beautiful dream." "I'll be good," Dante promised. "Good. I don't like making threats." Dante fell silent, pensive rather than with the moodiness that had consumed him for the last few days. What was Larimore doing? Was he grooming him for leadership? No doubt he thought this was funny, in his perverse way, but the man's eyes sparked with something more. Dante had gotten the impression no one around the keep really liked Larimore. They feared him more than they derided him, granting a grudging respect to the undeniable efficacy of Samaran's hand, no matter how slapdash a demeanor he wore on his cool brown face while executing his many charges. But they did laugh behind his back, imitating the sharp tone of his words, perhaps thinking he used too many or thought himself too clever. They muttered obscenities and the kind of mild threats that carried no weight. They did what he said, but they didn't like him. Perhaps the only one who did was Samarand, and she was so busy handing down orders from on high, Larimore was all but autonomous. As far as Dante knew, the man had no pull with the council. Clearly he hated them, resented them for his own obscure reasons. His lot was wholly thrown in with Samarand, and if for any reason she lost her seat, he would lose his as well. What was it, then? He was snagging up Dante before anyone else noticed his potential, shaping him up into an ally to help Larimore carve out his own tiny piece of the Empire inside the Citadel's gates. Dante thought so. Larimore had kept a close eye on the long leash he gave his pupil. His attention had gone beyond the way all adults had of trying to turn the younger people they had influence over into shorter versions of themselves, that strange instinct they had to stamp any sign of youth into their own mold, as if the existence of different opinions and methods threatened their very lives. It was like old people were terrified of dying without duplicating their minds on those who would replace them. That instinct, too, was in the things Larimore did. But unlike most men, it wasn't his driving force. He had other intentions for Dante. He wanted the boy to be able to hold his own. Perhaps, in time, to be able to watch Larimore's back. That's what this sit-in with the council was about, Dante decided. The council was his weak point. He wished he had a little more time to build Larimore's loyalty to him. There would come a time when it would be tested against the man's ties to Samarand. Maybe with another couple months, half a year, Dante would pull harder than her. He hoped when that moment did come, it would at least cause Larimore to hesitate long enough to lend Dante the advantage.
"Care to share the thoughts twisting your face up like that?" Larimore said, spitting Dante with a severe look.
"What insults an old man most? Calling him withered, weak, or impotent?"
"Why not all three?" Larimore said.
They reached the landing to the floor of the council chambers, and he took Dante aside before they went into the hall.
"I want you to pay close attention to the individuals," he said, voice low. "It would be a huge mistake to think their minds are united. The most important thing you can learn is what divides them. Pay special heed to the oldest man there, Tarkin Vastav. He's the nominal voice of what you might call the men of moderation. Doesn't speak his mind as freely as he once did, but perhaps that's a sign he's starting to lose it. This meeting might rouse him."
"Are you expecting a fight?"
"Not from him. I expect more trouble from Ollivander. Brown-haired, ogreish-looking, 10 or 12 years my senior. You'll know him by the way he fawns on Summer's every word."
Dante filed away the nickname. "If he's so taken with her, why would he be causing trouble?"
"Because she plans to leave him behind while she's off earning glory."
"What? Why would she do that?"
"You'll see," Larimore said, and would say no more.
He opened the dark-stained door and took them down the corridor that led to the chambers, brushing past servants too busy with preparations to give him and his protégé a second glance. Larimore paused outside the council's double doors, the ones imprinted with the stylized tree of Barden, then cleared his throat and straightened his collar. He opened the door, revealing the long, simple table Dante had seen through the eyes of his rat. Sunlight spilled through the north-facing window. A half-mile distant, the grey waters of the bay foamed against the shore. Dante counted 11 taken seats, 10 men and 1 Norrin, enormous as a rampart, his brows and hair and thick, gauzy beard looking white and tempestuous as a storm around a peak. The seat at the head of the table was empty. Servants stood frozen against the walls, eyes and ears trained on the deep, deliberate chatter of the assembled council. Dante looked at Larimore for help, and the man jerked his head and circled around the table to stand behind and to the right of the empty chair. Dante moved to take his left, and with a discreet tug of the boy's cloak, Larimore shifted him behind and to his own right. About half of the council were white-haired and in varying degrees of personal antiquity, but from the look of resigned martyrdom on one of the old men's unbearded face, Dante took him to be Tarkin, dissenter. He sat silent, unheeded. Ollivander was one, if not the youngest, a bare hint of grey in his well-trimmed brown beard, and when he spoke, the men around him turned their heads to listen. A few of the council cast glances Dante's way, examining this novelty in their cloisters. The Norrin, Tarkin, a middle-aged man with a long nose and his hair in a queue. "All outsiders in their way," Dante guessed. Before he could pass out any more details, the talk died off, and Samarand emerged into the airy chamber. Larimore stood straighter, tilted his chin. By reflex, Dante did the same. She made her way to the head of the table, giving Dante a distracted look as Larimore pulled out her chair.
"Anything new about the rebels, Ollivander?" she said, and already Dante was lost. He'd expected a prayer or something to start it off. They were priests, right? She did speak in Malish, at least, and he didn't have to trust his spotty Gascon.
He'd come to learn almost every man of means in the Dead City was bilingual, while many men of the South never bothered to learn the tongue of the North, with the result being most conversation in mixed company took place in Malish. It was almost a point of pride among the Malish men to speak no other language but that of their birth.
"Our scouts are nipping around their heels," Ollivander said in a steady baritone. "They have a few hundred, four at the utmost. Good men, but they've been living in the wilds for weeks. No official backers, from what I've seen, just rabble."
"Do they look especially schemish?"
Ollivander frowned, as if he didn't recognize the word.
"I don't expect they've come all this way to shake their fists at us. Best prepare for something."
"Right." Samarand put her hands flat on the table and met the eyes of each man in turn. "I'm not going to waste words. I'm only taking six of you."
"Six?" the old Norin rumbled after a general exchange of looks.
"That's all we need. I'm not going to triumph in the field and then return here to find a smoking crater."
"We do have a few soldiers," the Norin said, "not to mention a tall set of walls."
"Look," Samarand said, and pressed her lips together. "We need seven. Anyone else would be lace frills, nice to look at, not terribly functional."
"And wearing all your lace at once doesn't usually leave you open to invasion," Ollivander added.
Dante watched Samarand smile with half her mouth.
"Who's to come?" said the man with the long nose and longer brown hair.
"Walter, Baxter, Vanagon, Vakshaw, Fanshan, and Pyotr."
Samarand ticked off on her fingers. None of the men Larimord named for him. Ollivander's nostrils flared. He pinched his brows together.
"My lady, stow it," she said.
"I need you here overseeing the citadel. Take pride in that responsibility."
The men who'd been named exchanged smug looks while those left off struggled with their shock. After a few moments, a general babble arose as they marshaled their arguments and Samarand held up her hands for peace.
"I know this must feel arbitrary to some of you. Try to remember we're not here for individual glory. Aran knows your hearts and minds. He'll know those who ensure the safety of this keep are no more important than those who'll be with me at Baden. Can you understand that?"
"And how did you decide who goes and who stays?"
said the long-haired man.
"With great trouble, Jackson, and anticipating all the arguments."
Samarand leaned back in her seat and touched her braid at the back of her neck.
"Don't take that to mean I just dismissed them. You know I'm anything but unreasonable."
"Granted, but neither infallible."
"I'll assume you wish to argue why your presence at the tree will be necessary. Let's hear it, then."
Jackson didn't hesitate.
"I've spent less time in service than most of the men here. Maybe that should count against me. But if this truly isn't about rewarding service or whatever other favor with glory, and is instead a matter of who's most vital to which limb of the body, I'd argue my grasp of the Nether is second to yours alone. To leave me behind, then, when it's uncertain how much skill we'll require, and would thus be safer to err on the side of abundance, appears to me as an oversight."
"Perhaps," Samarand said slowly. She cocked her head and stared at Jackson a few moments the way Dante imagined she'd stared when she felt the presence of his rat. "I'll give that its due consideration."
"Samarand,"
Jackson started. Are you about to forward another argument or just repeat the first in different words?
Jackson's face darkened. Then he nodded. Well enough.
Anyone else want to educate me on the unfairness of my decision? She said, raising her brows at the others.
I assume the wisdom of my long years isn't considered crucial,
old Tarkin said. Honestly, I don't dissemble when I say I'd prefer to have it with us, Tarkin. My fears you may falter on the way.
It's even colder that far north.
The trek will take days. If we leave you here, we risk missing out on some knowledge that could help us, but I've judged it a smaller risk than that of your health if you went. We can't stand before the White Tree with a gap in our seven.
He nodded, some of the resigned irony gone from his face.
Anyone else?
No one spoke up, perhaps knowing she'd handle them as swiftly as she had the others.
She pushed out her lips, impressed. Good. Don't try to assign any slights or whimsical boons to my selections. We're all working toward the same end. Those of you I named, be ready to leave on the morning of the eighth day. Everyone else, you've got your duties here, and they'll be doubled with the rest of us out. Make sure you're prepared.
She waited to see them nod their understanding, then set her elbows on the table.
Loath though I am to get ahead of ourselves, what's the latest from the south, Jackson?
Wetton's still the only city in Mallon where we might be said to have gained a lasting toehold, he said.
He reached up for his chin and seemed surprised to find it beardless.
Fewer have come back to the old ways than we'd wished. The less said about Bressel, the better. The devotion of our loyalists can't be questioned, but their ability is another matter, though nor can it be said they face no obstacles.
And the Colin Basin?
There we may safely forecast a more optimistic outcome, Jackson said. We've taken a number of the outlands and negotiated a treaty that will hold for the rest of the winter. That should leave them free to aid us with direct action elsewhere in Mallon, should that be our course. Ollivander would know more about that than I.
Samarand nodded his way. And Ollivander, who'd been lost in his own thoughts since he'd heard he'd be left behind, creased his brow and leaned one elbow on the table.
"Won't be easy," he said.
"Still, with support from Colin, and if Hart's got the sway he says he does with the Norren—"
here he nodded at the Norren priest—
"I think a late spring strike through the pass at Riverway would work. It would certainly hearten the locals to know they've got our support.
Especially if it comes on the heels of our success at Baden,"
Samarand mused.
"Set it in motion. Prepare for a mid-March march."
"You're going to invade Mallon?" Dante blurted.
A few of the priests gave him dubious glances. Larimore elbowed him in the ribs amidst the awkward silence. Dante ignored him.
"What about the parable of Ben?"
"From the mouths of babes," Tarkin chuckled.
"Oh, that's not even relevant," Samarand said.
The old man twisted his mouth at her.
"Is he wrong, then? Raising an army hardly suits your delicate words about the wrongs of vengeance."
"We're not talking about revenge. We're talking about liberation," Samarand said, meeting his gaze. "This has nothing to do with the third scar."
"You say that with almost enough conviction for me to believe it.
Tarkon, you're old enough to remember when those people would kill you if you dared worship Aron. Burnings, hangings, that sits fine with you?"
"Of course not," Tarkin said.
He cleared some phlegm from his throat.
"The physicians have an oath about not applying the cure when it would be worse than the disease. Surely in our wisdom, deriving as it does from a far higher source, we're able to apply that credo here."
Samarand touched her lips. "Unfortunately, we don't have the physician's experience to know when that cure would be worse. All I know is what I see.
What I see is a woman more driven by her own vision of justice than what